Thank you, Eloise. Our next speaker is Roberto Blum, an interesting person for a number of reasons. Nationality, United States of America. He lives in Brownsville, Texas, but he works in Mexico City, so he has a commute. He's a senior professional at CDAC, the Centro de Investigación para Desarrollo, Center for Investigation of Development. It's a highly regarded independent think tank in Mexico City, specializing in public policy issues. He is responsible for writing and publishing a number of books, articles, and position papers on Mexican policy issues and U.S.-Mexico relations. He's also Vice President for International Relations and Acting President of the Instituto para la Promoción de la Cultura Cívica, a Mexican NGO promoting civic culture and education. He's also a senior partner of Decision Network Associates, a newly established Mexican consulting firm, and we look forward to hearing from you now, Roberto Blum.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Last night, as you probably all noticed, we had an earthquake. But 15 days ago, I was in Mexico City, and I also had to experience an earthquake, a 7.4 earthquake. I thought that I had been able to dodge the earthquakes, but it seems they finally got me. And I'm going to try to talk about this Mexico-California relationship, which I think is one of the cutting-edge issues here in California, as well as the relation is in Mexico. This is because Mexico's economic growth has a great impact on immigration and other social issues over here in California. Next one, please. You know, Mexico will not go away, and California, unless we have some very big earthquakes, will not become an island in the near future. Both share common interests. California needs a wealthy and stable neighbor to the south, while Mexico needs all the help it can get to achieve sustainable economic growth and social development. Economic growth has been dismal through the last at least 100 years. Mexico's economy is not growing fast enough to accommodate its growing population. Since the early 1980s, 16 million Mexicans have not found jobs in the formal economy. Thus, now some 50% of Mexicans work in the shadow economy. The Mexican economy has grown barely 2% during the past 100 years. Mexico will reach the 100 million inhabitants in the year 2000. By the year 2018, there will be some 130 million Mexicans. These growing numbers, coupled with insufficient economic growth, will increase immigration, legal and illegal, to the United States, and there is no kind of barrier or fence that can stop that. Continued dismal economic growth in Mexico will produce some very unsavory side effects. Increased political instability inside Mexico, increased drug trafficking, increasing public health hazards and epidemics, increasing deterioration of the ecology, air and water pollution, desertification and land erosion. The Mexican economy will not grow at the necessary rates if Mexico's present political system is not overhauled. In fact, Mexico needs to grow at least 7% for the next 20-25 years, just not to fall into some kind of Africanization scenario. Corruption is ingrained into the Mexican political system. Rent-seeking structures and groups are at the basis of the whole political system, and we need institutional reforms, but this cannot be achieved under the existing political system because of vested interests. I'm going to try to explain a little what the Mexican political system is and how it came to be. Plutarco Elias Calles was a president of Mexico from 1924 to 1928, created Mexico's current political system in 1929. This was the result of the assassination of President recently re-elected Álvaro Obregón in July 1928. This assassination detonated the creation of the 1929 compact among the revolutionary leaders. They realized the need of sharing the spoils in a peaceful manner, or else they would all die under an assassin's bullet. Calles would become the jefe máximo, the boss, but at the same time would forsake re-election forever. The revolutionary leaders would form an orderly queue to achieve power and share the spoils. Political conflicts inside the revolutionary family, as it came to be known, would be resolved peacefully, and the jefe máximo, the capo di capi, would have the last word in solving all political conflicts. From the 1940s to the early 70s, the political system achieved a stable equilibrium. During this period, the Mexican economy achieved an acceptable rate of growth. It was around 6% per year during that period. By the mid-1960s, however, the first signs of trouble began to appear. For example, the agricultural sector showed grave distress signs after 1965. These were increasing fluctuations in agricultural production and an increasing migration of peasants to towns and cities. This was caused because of an imbalance between the income that the peasants received and the prices of goods they had to buy. By 1968, student unrest broke out in Mexico City. The government quelled it violently. It would seem that the 1929 compact began to erode fast. By 1971, a new president, Luis Echeverria, decided to solve the increasing political tensions and problems by distributing money to the different interest groups. Instead of reforming the political system, he just started to distribute money. Economic stability began to fail. Inflation rose from 3.5% in the year 1971 to 15.7% in 1973 and remained in the middle teens till late 1976 when it surged rapidly. The foreign debt increased fivefold from $4 billion to $20 billion, and the peso was devalued from 12.50 to the dollar to 22 to the dollar. The next president, López Portillo, who came into office in 1976, used the newly oil wealth to finance an aggressive development scheme. However, this administration of abundance, as he called it, became rife with corruption, and then the public foreign debt quadrupled to $80 billion. I was saying that it was $20 billion by 1976. By 1982, it was $80 billion. And the peso was devalued from 22 to 150. Growth averaged, however, 6.5% during the sexenio, during those 6 years. But the system was already unstable, and President de la Madrid began to restructure the Mexican economy. By 1986, the economy was open. We have to remember that the Mexican economy had been closed from 1940 to 1982 or 85. This meant that the government had very large tariffs to protect the national industries. But by 86, because of this impossibility to achieve some kind of reform, they had to open the economy. They agreed to the GATT, and also the foreign debt was restructured. However, inflation reached 157% in 1987, and growth averaged barely 0.8% per year during that sexenio. Then came President Salinas from 1988 to 1994, and he promoted a deep structural reform of the Mexican economy. Inflation was reduced to 6%, 1994. Privatization of state enterprises was speeded up. The banking system was privatized. We have to remember that in 1982, President López Portillo nationalized the banks without any kind of checks and balances in a completely unconstitutional manner. And so this banking system was again privatized 12 years later. Growth reached an average of 2.7% during that sexenium. But, and this is the big problem, Salinas failed to reform the political system. Then came President Zedillo. Ernesto Zedillo became president after winning the cleanest and most transparent election since 1911. Zedillo won with 17 million votes. That's 50% of the total votes. His candidacy, however, was the result of Luis Donaldo Colosio's assassination in March 1994 over here on the border in Tijuana. Zedillo was an unwilling candidate and was not prepared to become president of Mexico. Zedillo was an able technocrat. His achievements in the Bank of Mexico and the budget secretariat were widely known. However, as Secretary of Education, his lack of political savvy began to appear. He was considered an honest and incorruptible person. But just 19 days after inauguration, Zedillo committed some serious economic and political mistakes. His initial cabinet was weak and inexperienced. Jaime Serra, who was appointed Secretary of the Treasury, left 20 days after the inauguration. Fausto Alzati, the Minister of Education, was sacked after 53 days because of a degree scandal. And Esteban Moctezuma, the Interior, Minister of the Interior, left after just 6 months because he could not deal with Marcos in Chiapas. The peso was devalued just 19 days after Zedillo was inaugurated. The administration, however, did not take any effective actions for 3 months. The Mexican economy plunged. In 1995, Mexico's GDP fell 7%. However, in 1996, it began to recover. By the year 2000, the Mexican economy will have grown an average of only 2.6 per year during the sexenium. And Zedillo committed another serious mistake. He blamed the Salinas administration for the economy's woes. To achieve a clean and definitive break with Salinas, which has always been the case with each successive administration in Mexico, Zedillo allowed for Raúl Salinas, Carlos Salinas' brother, to be incarcerated on murder charges. With this, Zedillo broke a key rule in the Priest Compact: never to touch a former president or his immediate family. Zedillo has been able successfully to make some important reforms. He reformed the pension system on the Chilean model. He got Congress approval for FOAPROA, which is something of a mixed bag. FOAPROA is trying to save the banking system. Because of the crisis of 1994 and 95, the non-performing loans of the banking system just shot up. And this meant that most, or I would say all, the banks in Mexico were technically broken. So the government initiated this program, which was some kind of an institution to save the banks by giving some kind of credits to the banks so that they could still function. This FOAPROA issue has grown now to be around $90 billion, and the government just took over the debt of those $90 billion to save the banking system. And the full number of those billions has not yet come in. It probably will come up up even more. So Mexico's public debt, has grown from about $100 billion, and if you add the FOAPROA debt, which is also a government public debt, will be around $2 billion. That's about 50% of the GDP. He privatized railroads and seaports, but has failed on the privatization of the petrochemical sector, and now he's trying to privatize the electric company, but probably will fail also. The politics under Zedillo have become much more complex. Elections have become competitive, no doubt about that. The PAN and the PRD, which are the opposition parties, the main opposition parties, effectively challenged the PRI in two-thirds of Mexico's states. Opposition parties govern 3 out of every 5 Mexicans at the county and state level. Zedillo's relations with his party, the PRI, have caused havoc inside the PRI. He decided that he was going to maintain what he called a healthy distance from the PRI, thus abdicating from the main role of the presidency in Mexico regarding the political system. The PRI is now undergoing a rank-and-file rebellion. The Revolutionary Family Compact, established in 1929, has broken down under Zedillo. Zedillo did not enforce the monopoly of power clause. He has allowed opposition parties to get counties, administrations, and governorships. Zedillo did not protect the former president or his close family. That's another important clause of the compact. Zedillo has not allowed the family to benefit of the spoiled system. Until recently, Zedillo had been considered incorruptible. Now this is being put to doubt. And Zedillo has not acted as the supreme arbiter in Mexican politics. This is his main and most grave sin. Mexico's political system has changed, but paradoxically remains the same. Mexico now has 3 competitive parties, PAN, PRI, and PRD, and the PRI has lost its former hegemony, but the system remains a spoiled system. Public and transparent financing of the political parties, which has now been statute by law, helped the PRD, that's a center-left party, hurt the PRI because now it has only a limited amount of financing and transformed the nature of the PAN. It was a citizens' party. Mexico's politics is fast becoming local. Extreme centralization is giving way to extreme regionalism. The north border region is growing and is growing economically and undergoing democratization. The Gulf border region, while also growing, is maintaining a traditional priest hold on power, and the south central region is consistently becoming more chaotic. The PRI is now losing votes. It now commands only some 45% of the national votes. The PRD is generally, but falsely, perceived as the winner in the 1998 elections and in this year's elections, but in fact, it is number 3. The PAN is perceived as the great loser, though, in fact, it got some 28% of the votes, and Vicente Fox, its candidate, is ahead in most polls for the presidency in the year 2000. Zedillo's power to appoint his successor is being challenged inside the PRI. Local successful politicians are no longer willing to submit to the president. If Zedillo appoints a candidate, the PRI will become seriously divided. This seems to be what's happening now. A divided PRI will probably lose the 2000 presidential election, and a divided PRI will pose a serious threat of national violence. Political violence among the various PRIistas groups is not any longer inconceivable. The PRIista compact has broken down. Therefore, any and all means can be used. Dirty tricks and character assassinations, political assassinations which fortunately have not happened this year, but might still happen, local group support for guerrillas and terrorism, and the use of army and drug traffickers as executors of political violence. Whether the PRI wins or loses the election, Mexico and the US will face difficult times. Growing immigration will continue to flow north. Drug trafficking will continue to be a problem until the US legalizes drug use. Mexico will become more decentralized and unpredictable. No individual or institution will be able to take important decisions by itself, thus a problem of stillness there. Decision-making processes will be slower and paralysis in government may seem to happen. If the PRI wins the year 2000 election, there might be a reversal of some neoliberal policies. The new government will have to make a clear break with Cedillo. The Mexican economy will suffer, and the north border region will not accept such developments. A gradual de facto secession will begin. However, if the PRD wins the election, the scenario is not much better. A more radical but symbolic reversal of Cedillo's policies will take place. The Gulf border region governors will take steps to succeed. The north border region will accelerate its de facto secession, and groups of discontented PRIistas will try to topple the PRD government. Some kind of coup d'etat may happen. If the PAN wins the election, the PRI and the PRD will make trouble for the new government, and analogous scenarios to the previous would develop. The key to avoid these awful scenarios seems to be the political ability and the personality of the individual who will win the presidency in the year 2000. I could conclude saying that Mexico's future is uncertain, that California's self-interest coincides with a stable and growing Mexico, that local politics in Mexico will become more and more important as the centralization takes effect, and a Californian attitude of openness to Mexican immigration will help both parties in the near future. Thank you very much. Thank you.